This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Coach Jen in Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 22nd, episode 2354, brought to you today by StatelineTack.com. Good morning, horse world.
It's Wednesday. Today is Wednesday.
He's a very mixed up horse.
Authorization acknowledged.
You know what they say about Wednesday.
Yabba-dabba-doo!
Have a good Wednesday. Thanks.
Well, it looks like the Horses in the Morning hosts have flown the coop today. So sit back and enjoy this previously aired masterpiece from the Hit 'em Audio Vaults. And it features a mashup of crappy lists and horse health segments. Something to make you laugh. Something to make you feel smarter.
All right. Speaking of horses, we can get Jemmy involved in this one if she's still there. She thinks she's fallen asleep.
No, I'm still here.
Okay. She usually takes a nap about this point.
She just woke up.
Yes,
literally,
that's right.
Just woke up.
For the horse health segment, she's napping and coming back.
Not true. Actually, I learned something on the horse health segment today. I always thought that colic was like a very specific thing. And I learned today that it's kind of a general term for pain in the gut, and it can be attributed to many things.
Look at you.
Look at you.
Learning. Wow. Amazing. So I have a list here that was put together by a website called Top 10. And, you know, they're going to be experts in horses. You know that because it's a website called Top 10 HQ. And Top 10 HQ does all kinds of top 10 lists. And they put together a list of the top 10 most famous historical horses. Now, you haven't looked, neither one of you have looked at this list. So, Jemmy is not a horse person for new listeners.
Nope.
So, Jemmy, we're going to see if you've heard of any of these top 10 horses.
Jemmy, let's just go with this. Can you, name the first super famous horse that pops in your brain?
Seabiscuit.
Ding, ding,
wow,
ding.
Wow, look
I,
at you.
I can also name Justify now. Yay.
Look at you. Two. She's got
Does
two.
Does Black Beauty count?
Perfect. So that's another one. Okay, Glenn, let's start with Seabiscuit.
Ding, 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 number one on the list. Look at you go, Jemmy. Was that on your number one too, Jamie?
I didn't create numbers. I created categories.
Okay. All right. So we've got the one that Jemmy knows. Give me some of yours and we'll see if it's on this list that was,
well,
I think, put together by non-horse people.
Her second one was Black Beauty. Is that on the list?
Black Beauty was not a real horse.
My second one was Justify. Black Beauty was a joke.
Yeah, and sort of. It is. So
it's not a joke, Glenn.
So thank you, Jemmy. I appreciate that. Black Beauty is not on the list.
Okay, so I nerded out on this and went with categories. So I went with horses that served in the military. We've got Sergeant Reckless.
Ding, ding, ding. Number eight on the list. Okay. If Sergeant Reckless wasn't on this list, I wouldn't have brought you the list.
Yeah, I would have been really unhappy. Yeah. What about Traveler?
Let me see. Wait a minute. I thought I saw. Nope, not on the list.
Oh, man. Okay, I'm gonna go back. If Secretariat's number or Seabiscuit's number one, I gotta have Secretariat.
Nope, not on the list.
What about, we're gonna go more historical, Men of War?
Not on the list.
What? Okay, then so those were the racehorse category, and I had the horses that served category, and now I have the horse actor category. I'm gonna go with Mr. Ed.
Good one. Ooh. But not on the list.
Okay,
can't believe that wasn't on my list.
Following that one up, what about Trigger?
Yes, ding, 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 number nine on the list. And of course, okay, Jemmy, who was Trigger's horse?
Wait a minute. I can't think of the guy's
right
name.
There.
It was what he.
It's right
darn
there.
Darn it, he was
guitar.
One of those gunsling.
Guitar.
Oh no, totally
no,
not.
He had a guitar, no, but he was also a gunslinger. Keep going. You're close.
You're gonna have to give it to me. I'm not gonna,
husband,
I'm
wife.
Not gonna land on it. What?
Roy Rogers.
Not who I was gonna guess. Sad to say.
So we have, so far we had Sergeant Reckless, Seabiscuit, and Trigger.
Yep.
No Secretariat, no Man of War, no Traveler, no Mr. Ed. I'm trying to think who the hell else could be on that list. Is it more racehorses? Is
think
it
historical.
More...
I mean, really historical.
George Washington's horse.
Aristides was the first ever to win the Kentucky Derby.
Nope, you're not thinking historical enough. You need to go way back in time.
Like cave drawings.
Cave drawings. Okay. Cave drawings. Number 10 was Jim Key. Do you know who Jim Key was?
No.
Jim Key was an incredible performing horse who lived at the turn of the 20th century. It was claimed that he could not only read, write, and perform simple arithmetic, he could also cite Bible passages. He performed all of the United States, most famously the St. Louis Fair and the Madison Square Garden.
How does a horse cite a Bible passage?
I don't know, and I don't know anything about Jim Key. It sounds to me like we need to get a rest of the scoop on Jim Key. Trigger,
ooh,
of course.
Speaking of. Yeah, what about Snowman? Is he on the list?
No,
I just popped in.
Snowman's on the list. Are you kidding? This is non-horse people. It's a top 10 HQ that wrote this. Trigger, of course, number 9. Sergeant Reckless was number 8, and he should be on any list. I'm sorry. Yep. Copenhagen was another military horse belonging to the Duke of Wellington in 1813. Was ridden into the Battle of Waterloo.
And how did you not guess that, Jamie? How did you not guess that?
Gosh, Copenhagen was right on the tip of my tongue. Ha ha, you see what I did there?
How about Figure? Do you know who Figure is?
Oh, I do know who Figure is, but it's escaping me right now.
He was the foundation sire of the Morgan breed.
Oh, okay, there you go. Yes, Justin Morgan had a horse. Got it.
Yes, his name is Figure. And Figure was the reason that was so important, blah, 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 is that the Morgan was the most popular horse in the beginning of the 20th century.
Okay, I've got some more guesses. I'm seeing where this is going. Okay. Bucephalus, Alexander the Great's horse.
Bucephalus is number 2 on the list.
Okay, any of the Jarley Arabian, the Godolphin Arabian.
There you go. Ding, ding, ding. Number 5 on the list, the Godolphin Arabian. Lived in the UK in the 18th century, is famous for being one of the 3 founders of the modern thoroughbred racing bloodstock. And you would have thought it was Arabian bloodstock, but it's not thoroughbred.
Sorry, I meant thoroughbred.
Yep. But he was an Arabian. Yep.
Who else?
Number 4 on the list, Comanche.
Nope.
Military horse, Captain Miles Keough, Battle of Little Bighorn.
You know, it's easy to know all the facts about one when you have the list.
He's talking like he knows something. He doesn't know anything but the words in front of his eyeballs right now.
Thank you. I love having her on. It's 2-1 all the time.
How about Marengo?
Obviously, Marengo should be on the list.
I actually knew this one because I read a book about this person.
Because you read the list? Go ahead. What is it?
Napoleon's horse. Napoleon's horse, Battle of Waterloo, all of that. So that was Marengo.
Not the cave dwellers.
By the way, his skeleton can be seen at the National Army Museum in London if you want to see Marengo's skeleton. And then Bucephalus and Seabiscuit. They did have Seabiscuit number 1, so you got to give them credit there. Probably because they watched the movie, whoever wrote it.
What about Farlap? No Farlap?
No. There's not room for all 100 that we would have on our list. There you go. There's the top 10 famous historical horses, and Jemmy knew one.
Yay! How come the Godolphin Arabian was on there, but not the Byerly Turk or the other one?
Or Mr. Ed.
You can send all of your complaint emails to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com because she's not here.
I'm writing her a strongly worded letter right now.
You should. You definitely should. All right. We asked the auditors what list they wanted, and they picked the 10 most expensive pets in the world. This was put out by a company that does top 10 lists. So are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's see.
Number 10. And will horses be on this list is the big question. Number 10.
So are these just normal pets? Or are these like people like, I would like a giraffe?
These are pets you can own legally.
Okay. Because okay. I would like a giraffe. And Dominique from Zebras R Us told me it was $100,000.
Yeah, that's kind of expensive. Probably you don't want to put it in the backyard. But how about a toucan? You can own a toucan. And one toucan, you know the ones with the big long beaks that are really cool. One toucan will apparently
follow your nose.
You...
It always knows.
Yes,
everybody
exactly.
knows what a toucan is.
Everybody
it's
knows. And for $10,000, you can have one.
That's number 10?
That's number 10. So the I can't even say it. The Debraza monkey. Apparently, next to chimpanzees, the Debraza monkey is the next most expensive monkey there is. It can be bought for around $10,000 if you can find one, but apparently they're very hard to find. So I never thought owning a monkey was a good idea, but, you know.
One of the radio stations I worked for, Star 94, they had a guy that took a monkey around, and he would, like, use his monkey to try to pick up chicks. But... And it was like a little capuchin. That was a capuchin, just like Ross had on Friends. And he would walk around and try to, I mean, he was like the mascot of the radio station, this little capuchin monkey and the weird monkey guy. And I always thought, okay, so this guy with a monkey picks you up, he takes you to his house. Apparently half his house is the monkey's house. So I'm like, what would that do for the libido of the woman going, it smells like monkey poo in here. Sorry, that was just me thinking. So yeah,
one of the actors I worked with at the acting company I owned was a professional entertainer for years and years and years, and he said, "I'm going to retire with a monkey. Just go to fairs, and you know how people give the monkey money, and you know that's a fun thing to do at fairs. That's what he does. That's his retirement. He has his monkey, and he makes more money than he did when he was professionally employed with his monkey because everybody wants to give the monkey a dollar." So macaw is next on the list, number 8 on the list. Birds are heavy on this list. Apparently,
how much is a macaw?
$15,000. And you have to keep in mind that they have the 10th longest lifespan of any animal. So they're going to be around longer than you. That's what people forget about birds.
It's amazing that you pay that much. And then there's a little zoo by my house. It's like the largest privately owned zoo in the U.S. And I go there and there's 10,000 of the birds there. And turns out, almost every one of these birds was donated because the people couldn't take care of them anymore.
Or they died.
Outlive everybody.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. Kids don't want it. There's a cockatoo, the palm cockatoo. Now you think cockatoos can't be that expensive, but apparently, it's the palm cockatoo is very expensive. Sold for $16,000 each. Unlike most parrots, they are usually full of bright colors, and they are native to Queensland, Australia. So, yeah.
Okay.
A lot of birds on this list. Oh, and then there's one that'll really surprise you. Number 6 on the list is the rare stag beetle. A rare stag beetle was sold by a Japanese breeder. First of all, I didn't know there were beetle breeders. You can come to Florida and find lots of beetles. For $89,000.
It What? How big is this beetle?
It's and a beetle size.
What? No.
Yes. It's the Does most it expensive like... insect that has ever been sold.
And it's in China or Japan, you said? Which
Japan.
One?
Yeah, they're a little weird about that stuff.
Well, they like to grind tiger bones down and take it for their wieners. So maybe this is something like, does it make their wieners work better?
I do not know. And it does not go into that much detail. I apologize. Number 5.
Again, Glenn, if you're going to have the news, I'm going to need all of it.
You're always asking questions you shouldn't be asking. So number 5, white lion cubs. Apparently, it's legal to own lions. And we do know, I know Texas, there are a lot of people who own lions. I think it's stupid, but that's my opinion. But apparently, the white lion cubs are wild and dangerous animals. They are a rare breed of lions that is so coveted by wild pet lovers that the cubs currently have a price tag of $150,000.
That just encourages people to
I know. I agree. I'm not arguing there. And then there's Sir Lancelot Encore. Sir Lancelot Encore is a Labrador retriever that cost $155,000.
Why?
The price came to this due to the procedure from which he came to be. He was a clone of another Labrador retriever named Sir Lancelot, who was diagnosed and died of cancer. The family that owned him loved him so much and apparently had more money than God, and they had him cloned for $155,000.
When that comes down a little bit, I have a horse I'd like to clone and two dogs.
Yeah, it hasn't come down yet. We've talked about cloning for years, and it's still $100,000. Number three on the list is a Tibetan Mastiff. As you know, Mastiffs are really, really big. And this was in, it was originally developed to guard livestock against wolves. And the Tibetan Mastiff is the one with the big hairy head. It kind of looks like a lion.
Yeah.
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 the most expensive Tibetan Mastiff was bought in China for a whopping, any guesses?
I don't want to know.
$582,000.
That's a dog?
For a dog, yes.
That's like a dog. It's a big dog, too. So they're only going to live like maybe 7 years.
8 years, yeah. 7, 8 years. But then again, if you're paying $500,000, you could have them cloned because that's a
true.
Lot. Yeah. Okay, number two on the list is going to surprise you. It's Missy the cow. Missy came from a Holstein breed of cows that are known for having the highest production of milk. However, she was apparently well known as the top breeding cow, and they paid $1.2 million in Canada, a group of investors, for her embryo and hoped to produce more of the same breed. So they bought her for her embryo, and so there you go. And they have a Cow of the Year contest in Canada every year where the cows routinely go for $500,000 to $1 million each.
Yeah, but I mean, to be honest, that's like 37 American dollars. So.
And horses do come in on the list. Y'all be happy to know.
All of our Canadian listeners.
Number one on the list is a horse that was sold, and you probably can guess.
It's a green, what's his name?
Yeah, you're right. Think about one of the other pets we just had on the list, and you'll get the name.
Oh, it's the green macaw. Close. Like that.
The green monkey.
The green monkey.
Yes, sold for $16 million at an auction in 2006. And whatever.
Never
raced,
ran a race.
Right?
Never
it was
ran
a complete
race.
Flop, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the green monkey
but
was
apparently
top on the list.
Grinding his bones makes your wiener work better. So. He did have something redeeming.
Are you ready?
Cade Smith just messaged me and he says he uses his monkey to pick up dates as well.
Cade probably has a monkey.
It's time for the Horses in the Morning Horse Health Report, when our intrepid hosts, together with an unlucky member of the equine veterinary trade, attempt to inform, enlighten, or terrify horse owners everywhere into funding a Kickstarter campaign to mass-produce Kevlar-coated, bubble-wrap-lined equine products.
Well, last time Dr. Siemens was coming on, he was to talk about leptospirosis, but I had just had a diagnosis of a tendon on Zeus, so I hijacked our conversation. But Dr. Siemens is back to actually cover lepto this morning. Good morning, Dr. Siemens.
Good morning, you guys. How you doing?
Oh, my gosh. You're one of my favorite guests that we have on our show. Thank you for coming back on. I don't know why you keep doing it, but you do.
Well, obviously, Denise hasn't listened to the broadcast because she keeps inviting me back. We can blame her.
Oh, it's not her fault. She, you know, she's a little busy. So here's the thing I realized, Dr. Siemens, is we actually have had on the show the creator of Horse Vet Corner. Now, for those who don't know, on Facebook, there's a page called the Horse Vet Corner where you can go and ask a question. And any random actually certified veterinarian will get on there and answer your question when they have the time for free. Glenn, it's an amazing site and it's really cool. And I go there and I read stuff all the time. And I was reading and I was like, holy cow, Dr. Siemens is one of the veterinarians that volunteers his time to answer Facebook questions. Why on earth would you do that?
I really get a charge out of talking to people about their horses. And yeah, thanks for the plug for HVC. Deb Haynes and her husband, Ken Brown, started that a couple of years back, and I think there's 60,000 members now worldwide. And so it gives me an opportunity. I mean, I get some pretty wild questions and stuff from Australia and other places that, you know, we don't see regularly. So I get to I get to do something I really hate it when my clients do, which is go see Dr. Google about stuff. And it's just amazing what you can learn. So it's really fun. We get good feedback, and it's, you know, something I can do. It's at 5 a.m, you know, so I don't disturb my lovely bride.
Yeah, that sounds, or just have some coffee and answer some questions. That sounds great. Well, and then you get to come on and talk to us about leptospirosis. What on earth is that?
Well, this is the highlight of my day. I really enjoy you guys inviting me back many times. But I guess, as far as what's going on with lepto at this point in time is how it's involved with something called equine recurrent uveitis, a.k.a. moon blindness. And the bug itself can cause kidney problems. But as a general rule, when we start talking about lepto, we're talking about an eye problem. And so equine recurrent uveitis or anterior uveitis or moon blindness or periodic ophthalmia is another term for it. It's probably the number one cause of blindness in horses. It is a very, very complicated disease, something that we still really don't understand yet, but it's characterized by basically three things. They will hold their eye closed or partially closed. That tells us if they got eye pain. The pupil will be constricted, and that also tells us that we got eye pain. And most of the time, there'll be a discharge. So basically, you got two types of eye problems. You got eye problem where it's goopy and it's held open. That's usually just something minor, conjunctivitis, little irritation, flies, whatever. Goopy eye held closed, that's the problem because you got eye pain. I always treat those as emergencies. I want to look at them right away.
Yes, absolutely. If you see something with your eye, you call the vet. I mean, aside from what you said, with just put a fly mask on it. But so with the eye pain, the typical eye pain that I've seen is there's a scratch on the cornea. So this would be eye pain, eye closed, the staining would not show anything.
Well, it's interesting you should bring that up because we'll restrict our discussion. Let's call it ERU, the equine recurrent uveitis. The eye becomes really irritated and horses will rub it. You know, when you got something in your eye, you're rubbing your eye, your mom says, don't rub your eye. Well, she knows what she's talking about. You shouldn't, although it's hard not to. Mm-hmm. But with the horse, that eye becomes irritated, and it's very common for these ERU cases to be presented because of a scratch on the cornea, because they're rubbing it. And so that's how they do the self-trauma. So I always stain a cornea because I want to make sure we're not dealing with some type of a lesion on the cornea. The stain is a green dye that we'll squirt in the eye or a little piece of paper we can put on the cornea. And if there's a disruption in that structure, then it will take up that stain and tell us where the scratch is. So in some cases of ERU, we're not going to have a stainable ulcer. In some cases, we will. But that's where it gets complicated because if you've got a case of ERU, then topical steroids would be the way to go. If you've got corneal ulcer, you would never use steroids on those cases because that will make things a lot worse.
Oh, so my God. What ERU, do you do?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about. You stick your finger in here and hold it to the wind and hope for the best because a lot of the ERU cases, these horses will traumatize themselves. So now you got steroids on board because that's what you should be treating ERU with. And then the horse scratches its cornea and it goes south because you develop something called a melting corneal ulcer because of the bacteria, because of the immunosuppression, because of the steroid. It's an ugly, ugly thing. So, boy, it's a tough call. It really is. And one of the aggravating things about this particular disease is that it's going to get better no matter what you do. And so that's why it's called recurrent uveitis. So uveitis is a uvea is one of the structures of the eye, and we won't go into that there. And itis just means inflammation. So anytime you got anything that says itis, like laminitis, tendonitis, you know tendonitis very well. That's just an inflammation of the structure. So when we've got uveitis, that's an inflammation of the uvea. And the challenge here is that with ERU is because it is recurrent, it comes back. So we can get confused about our success of our treatment because no matter what you do, it's going to get better. And so we treat it with, you know, with something we buy at the feed store, you know, and now all of a sudden it's better. And now we get lulled into this sense of false security thinking that now we've got the magic bullet here. And I've been dealing with this disease for over 30 years, and every 6 or 8 years, somebody will come out with a cure, and I will jump right on the bandwagon and I'll start using it, and everything works for a month, but then it will come back. So that's always the challenge.
And doesn't this affect more than the eye? Doesn't it also get into kidneys and internal organs?
That's a great question. Now, leptospirosis does tend to affect the kidney. But the challenge is that you probably aren't going to see a horse that's really, really, really sick strictly because of leptospirosis. And what happens with ERU is that there are antibodies built against the leptospirosis organism, and it's the antibodies that wind up in the eye that start to cause the problem. That's where it gets really complicated. As if it isn't complicated enough.
Do you know it's a leptospirosis in the eye and not just eye pain?
You're not going to.
Damn it.
It's a guess, okay? And so Ann Dwyer there in Pennsylvania, that's an equine practitioner and a good one. She's done a whole lot of work on this disease, and she's not one of the very few people that's done a lot of really interesting research that's not in academia. And so you can just Google her, Ann Dwyer, D-W-Y-E-R. Just Google her, and you'll find some of her research on the interweb. But the challenge with ERU is that all we can do is just treat the symptoms. I mean, by the time the lepto bug is in there, the damage is done. And so you're not going to be able to treat with antibiotics or anything like that. The vaccine there's not a vaccine out there for the horse. There is for the dog. The leptospira is a class of bacteria that causes Lyme disease. Borrelia is a breed or a genus of the leptospira type bacteria. And, it's of questionable benefit.
Well, I mean, how do they get it? Where does it come from?
Yeah.
It probably comes more from urine contaminating water from wildlife. Okay. Deer to some degree, cattle, raccoons, maybe possums. Tracking some of these diseases down gets to be a real detective story. Because some of this stuff, some of the life cycles of some of these diseases are very, very complicated. And so it's really hard. It's not just a matter of, oh, yeah, we found leptospirosis in the barnyard, and then now we've got a horse with ERU, and now we can say, oh, yeah, there's a direct cause and effect relationship there. It's not that easy. Well, some things it is. You know, you get bit by a rabid bat, you're going to have rabies. I mean, it's just that simple. But some of these other diseases, it's a matter of the body's response, the immune response that lodges in the eye, which makes it just crazy, crazy hard to figure out.
So can you do a blood test to see if they have it?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's two types of blood tests, okay? There's a blood test for antibodies, and then there's a blood test for the actual DNA of a particular organism. And so, but the challenge here is that it winds up being subject to some interpretation. For example, antibodies to like influenza. We could pull blood on you today for influenza and you would probably test positive. What that means is that you've been exposed to that virus, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're sick.
Right.
So but the gold standard has been, we'll do acute and convalescent antibody studies. What that means is we pull blood now, then we pull blood in 2 weeks. And if we see a fourfold increase, 400% increase in your antibody titer, that means that's what you had. Well, dang. In 2 weeks, you're going to be dead or better anyway. I mean, the surgery was a success, but your horse died, you know? So, it's one of those things that all we're going to do is treat the symptoms for ERU. And unfortunately, that's what we're left with. And no matter what you do, again, we talked about this earlier, is they're going to get better no matter what. That's what makes it so complicated about what particular treatment we're going to choose. But it's still a real challenge. There's some experimental stuff that's been out there that seems to show some promise, but it's still the subject of a fair amount of research, and we're still in the dark about this one.
Is it transmittable to humans? Because I know humans get lepto, right? I mean, animals, cat, dogs do, you know, but humans can as well.
Yeah, absolutely. This disease that's transmissible between animals and man is called zoonoses. And so things like tuberculosis, rabies, tetanus, you know, those types of things that we see associated, maybe not a direct contagion, but we still have the same exposure potential. So, you know, if you just stop and think about all the bacteria that are in your house, even if you're a very, very, you know, meticulous housekeeper,
which I am,
there's pathogens all over the place, and, you know, just better off not knowing. But leptospirosis is not one of those things that we would typically consider to be bad. You know, like if your cat has ringworm, you know, you're probably going to get it too. But lepto is not one of those. Good question, though.
Well, this is all very frightening and sad, and I don't like it. So if you could figure out a way to make this go away, that would be fantastic. Otherwise, I'm never going to sleep again.
When you're in vet school, you got to take this course of zoonotic diseases. And I'll tell you what, you'll never see a larger group of hypochondriacs in your life. Well, I'm tired sometimes. I felt feverish the other day. I had a cough. You know, all of a sudden you got African horse sickness and you're going to die. You
know? Oh, my God. Yeah, it's bad enough just listening to this segment. I get paranoid. Well, Dr. Siemens, thank you as always for your knowledge. But let's talk about your book real quick. Never Trust a Sneaky Pony. And other things they didn't teach me in vet school. And this is all true. And this is stuff that's happened to you over the last 30 years. Yeah.
That you can't make this stuff up. Truth is stranger than fiction. And that's the fun part about being a veterinarian. I get to play with other people's horses all day long and I get paid for it sometimes.
And the website is Cornerstone Equine. And there's only one E between Cornerstone and Equine. CornerstoneEquine.com. You're in Western Idaho. I'm sure you see all sorts of stuff. So thank you, as always, for coming on. And I always look forward to having you on the next time.
Oh, you guys are just too good to me. Thanks for plugging my book. And just keep me posted. Let me know what I can do to help. And I hope Zeus gets better.
Oh, thanks. Still going.
All right.
Thanks, Dr. Siemens.
Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
I like him. He's funny. I like him because he's also real. He doesn't give you any crap. It's just the way it is. Well, he's we don't know. Funny. We do know. It sucks. You know, you're all going to die.
I love it. It's funny because I knew a guy who was in vet school and he got so freaky about germs and like he became unpleasant to be around. And you're like, dude, you don't have to wash your hands every 30 seconds. Just your skin protects you from some bacteria. Just don't put your hand in your mouth. Okay. Just loosen up.
God, Jimmy worked as on the EMS on the ambulance for a while. God, that's got to freak you out too.
Then you got people's blood and stuff. Yeah, horse blood. I can take other people's blood.
Yeah, I'm in downtown New Orleans too, where it's just naturally gross.
Where everybody's throwing up in your ambulance. Yes.
StateLineTac.com is your one-stop spot for quality brands that you love, plus the latest in new products for horses and riders. From side pulls to jingle bob spurs, Stoggars to field boots, StateLineTac.com has it all. Stateline even carries a full line of supplements with auto ship options for convenience and additional savings. StateLineTac.com. We make riding affordable.
That's what I'm going to go with. We've got Brittany Beal on, and she is from Whiskey River, large animal mobile veterinary in North Carolina. Hello, Brittany.
Hi, how are y'all?
Great. Thank you so much for joining us. You are joining us because something that you guys posted on Facebook went very viral, and it's really intrigued a lot of people, and it seems like... I mean, it's pretty hardcore. So talk to us about what cecal trocharization is. And did I say it right?
We did. And certainly we try to post pictures of cases, especially cases that go well, to our clients so that they can learn a little bit and kind of celebrate with us. But we call it cecal trocharization. You're saying it exactly right.
Look at you, Jamie. In veterinary medicine,
a trochar. I'm sorry?
I said, look at Jamie Go pronouncing it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She did well. In veterinary medicine, a trochar is any type of an instrument that goes into a body cavity to release, most normally, gases. And in this case, in this mare, we had determined during her colic that her intestines were paralyzed. The term for that is ileus. They're not moving. So in order to buy her time until her intestines would turn back on, we decided that we were going to take a risk and we were going to trocarize her into her large intestine, or in a sense, into her cecum. The cecum is a part of the large intestine on a horse that is kind of like a big out pouch, very much like a, say, the appendix of a human. But horses actually use their appendix where we don't. So
isn't the cecum where fermentation occurs?
Yes, it's actually, yes, you're exactly right. It's where all of the fermentation occurs in the horse's intestines. And that is probably one of the more important parts of the horse's intestinal tract. Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like when you said it's an appendix, like our appendix doesn't do anything, but the cecum actually does have a function, right? I mean,
large function. It outpouches from the intestines like an appendix in the people, in humans.
Gotcha.
Okay, wait now, a minute. I'm just looking at the pictures. What you're basically telling us is you took a big ass long needle and stuck it halfway through the horse and relieved some gas. Yes. Is what I'm getting out of this. Yes. Okay.
We sure did.
Okay. That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
In this, you know, and again, it's not something that's performed on a lot at all. It is something that can be done to a very specific type of colic. Colic is a general term that means pain from the abdominal cavity. And there's a lot of different reasons why a horse may colic. That's why we work with your veterinarian, or you should work with your veterinarian to figure out exactly the cause. And in just this particular small case, the cause was that her intestines were not moving. So that is what we determined to do for her to try and help buy her time. We were giving her pain medications. We had passed a nasogastric tube and rectaled her. Nothing was necessarily holding her over. She did not have the option of referring into the university for medical or surgical management. So we took a risk. You know, at that point, we were going to do something that maybe might help. But if we didn't do anything at all, we were going to lose her. So we did. We decided in this point, we kind of dug through our bag of tricks. And what we used was a 14-gauge intravenous catheter. We sterile prepped the area. We were able to know kind of where to go based on the anatomy of the horse. And then also we use what we call percussion. We kind of bang on the side of the horse, listen with our stethoscope to hear the resonance of that big old bubble of gas that's most likely in the cecum at that point, because that's the area that the cecum sits normally in the horse. And we clipped and prepped and went ahead and went right through. We took about 4 inches of that five and a half inch needle before we actually hit where we were going to go. There was a loud pop and a lot of fizzing. And probably in about 15 minutes, she was almost 100% better. Now, of course, her guts were not moving, but her comfort level was significantly improved. And she was able to maintain herself. We went for a few little walks and she stood quietly in her stall. For about 4 hours, she had that needle in, and we decided to pull it out when she was pretty comfortable. And luckily for us, her guts did turn back on, and she's doing well.
Dr. MacGyver.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. But that is not something that I have a lot of. What is the diagnosis when the guts turn off? Like, what is that? Is it because the gut shut down because there was too much gas ahead of it, or?
Well, for her, you know, for her case, we're not really sure exactly what happened or why her guts stopped moving. We were just hoping to buy her time until they possibly turn back on. Some people will argue the point of when you do trocarize something, you allow that portion of the gut to deflate, that will sometimes stimulate the gut to start contracting and moving again. In her case, when the gut stops moving, the bugs or the, you know, biome of the gut, they're still producing gas. They're still digesting food. They're still producing gas. When the intestines aren't moving that along, they just start filling up like a big hot air balloon.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happened when this went viral, and I was reading some of the 2,000 comments that you got on your post.
Yes.
This is what the problem with something going viral is, people don't look at the whole picture. And I think what tended to happen is everybody's going, oh, it's a miracle cure now for colic.
It certainly is not.
Yeah, I think, but that's the problem,
do
right?
Not. Yeah. Tried this at
home. Yeah.
Like, how many people are like, I'll just stick a big ass needle in my horse and I'll go, like, oh my God, please call your veterinarian.
No, call your veterinarian. You need to have veterinary training. They need to be able to come out and determine the actual cause of the colic. This particular type of colic is not as common as what most of us see in practice, you know, volvuluses or twists, impactions, or things of that nature. Yes, we do get gas colics, but oftentimes the gut's not paralyzed. This, again, I mean, and there's lots of folks that have posted on their comments, no, it's a very specific type of colic, and that is the truth. It's not a new procedure. We've known about it, and veterinarians have used it for a long, long time. Probably not as common in horses. Like many people commented in cattle.
That's right. That's where I saw. I saw this 30 mm-hmm. years ago. I was at a farm. I used to work with dairy farmers, and I was at a farm, and they were doing this on a cow 30 years ago. Cows tend to have more of this kind of colic, right?
Cows do, because again, they have the four stomach chambers. They have a rumen, and it's also a fermentation compartment, but it's a lot larger, and they are more susceptible to bloat or just filling up with gas when they eat certain things. Horses, not so much. The reason horses may fill up with gas are very different than cattle.
Got it.
Unbelievable. Well, so did you, when you're saying that people have done this for a long time, were you guys surprised at how viral it did go and how many people were so excited about it?
We were very surprised. We were very surprised.
Did you get any new people coming as clients because of this?
Not that I've noticed just yet, but we definitely got a lot more likes on our Facebook
page. Gotcha.
We had a few folks contact us with questions, and we answered them as best we can, but they're not always... They weren't in our area, so we can't, you know, without seeing an animal, we can't answer too much. So,
where are you in North Carolina, by the way?
We are in the western part of the state, the very western part of the state. We're in Franklin, North Carolina, and we're in the mountains, so it's pretty awesome over here.
We'll be coming up for 2 weeks for World Equestrian Games, a try-on, so we'll be in your area.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yes. That'll be just down the road from where we're at. Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. Do you have any space on your floor for some people that need a place to stay?
That's right.
That'd be great.
Unfortunately, we do not. And it, you're probably still where we're at. You're probably a good hour and 45 minutes. So,
there'll be people staying that far away. Believe me. One of the riders yesterday, as a side note, just because you live there, one of the riders yesterday couldn't get, the rider hotel had filled up, so they had to get on his own. $600 a night for like a quality inn in Nashville. It was crazy for the WEG.
Yes.
It's
gonna be a madhouse.
Do I read here that you were a country singer before you became a vet?
Oh my goodness. Yes.
So are you out there singing all day long on your truck?
Mainly in the car, yes, in the truck.
So how long did you do that?
I started singing when I was just a little girl and thought I wanted to be a big star, just like every little girl does. And I sang probably right through high school and did some competitions when I was in undergrad. And that school really kind of takes your time away. And so I had to focus more on that once I actually decided I was going to vet school, and then I got in.
Okay, here's his question. Here's what he wants. We play a song on our show every day by an like published musician, you like published, but not signed, an unsigned. So an independent, sure. Do you have any independent songs that we can add to our list of songs that we play?
Well, I do not have any original music, so I don't know how that would be allowed. I do have a song that you guys could look up. It's a cover song that I rewrote that would, I don't know how that would work. So it's not original.
I already Googled her on YouTube to find any music, and I was going to play her segment out with it, but I couldn't find any. So I tried really hard.
Oh, no. Well, it's out there on YouTube. I don't know why you can't find it, but it is not technically an original song. So
see, you probably can't YouTube Dr. Beale. It needs to be just Brittany.
Dr. MacGyver. Yes, we're going to change her name now. Dr. MacGyver.
If you YouTube Brittany Beale and search Billy's song, it should come up.
I have that right here, actually. Brittany, yes. I didn't realize that was the same one because it listened as there it is. You're right. Billy's song. What year did you post this? It was just posted in 2018, according to this.
Yes, I did that this Valentine's Day for my husband.
All right, we're going to play a piece of it. Screw them.
I want to hear it. All right,
let's hold on.
Can't just hang up on her and play it. I want to hear a response.
She didn't sign up for this.
She's never calling again.
I don't think I did.
She will never hear from her again. That space on the floor is gone.
Laid my eyes on you, I knew.
Oh my God!
We'd spend this life side by side. I still feel the same after all of this time.
What's up, Reba?
How did you not get a deal? Oh my God!
Well. It takes time and money to make money. So
here's
for fun now. And
here's the thing, Brittany, when you are on The Voice, will you pick Blake or are you going to go with Adam? Like, I mean, you know, when they flip their chairs around.
I guess I'll have to decide who switches around fastest.
See, I'm picking the first one. The good strategy. Good strategy.
Do you watch all those shows and think about going on? Have you ever thought about it?
I've thought about it. It was my backup plan if I couldn't find a job after vet school, but everything worked out like it should have.
Well, I think you sound like Reba McEntire, but younger and better. So congratulations. That's awesome. You should follow up with that. Your husband is a lucky man to have such a talented songbird of a wife. That's awesome. And congratulations on this this procedure that you guys brought to light for horses, and you saved a life. So, I mean, than singing. It's way better to save a horse's life than sing well.
Yes, we get to see this mare grow old, and it's going to be great. We're glad to have her around still. Thank you, Dr. Beale.
Never coming on our show. No, we're going to be begging her to come back on. She's like, no.
No, I'm not doing that. Not with those two. We're going to call this, by the way, that Seagull Trekkers, the thing that you call this, we're just going to call it the Beale procedure from now on because it's much easier. Okay, I've renamed it.
Oh, well, that's okay. However, I did not invent it.
It's okay. It doesn't matter. We don't, you know, we don't care on this show. So
clearly.
Thank you, Dr. Beale. Let's play her.
Play her
out.
Song. Yeah, yeah, come on, keep going. I want to hear more. We'll do. Thanks, Dr. Beale.
You're welcome.
We'll
thank you.
Always be together forever. I won't give up. No matter what, I will stand here by you forever. Love is the road to our destiny.
Oh my God, I love this.
I know, it's really good.
Forever.
And now our own Dr. Wendy Ying speaks with Roger from Green Flower Botanicals in a series we call CBD Oil 101.
In our continuing series on CBD oil, we're going to find out why Green Flower Botanicals is different than other companies.
Well, thanks for asking that question, Wendy. We think that we're able to really provide a superior product for several different reasons. One of those is it begins with we source right here in the USA, and we purchase and have partnerships with farms in both Colorado, Kentucky, and Oregon, as opposed to a lot of companies are bringing in importing CBD from China. Along with that, our extracts are whole plant extracts instead of isolates. So what that just means is we keep all the fatty acids and trace cannabinoids in there that as they're naturally found and bonded in the plant itself. So it's just a really, really wonderful cannabinoid-rich oil. And then, of course, is just the safety and quality issues. Every one of our products is tested at a third-party laboratory for metals, heavy metals, for pesticides, fungus, molds, and, of course, for cannabinoid content itself. So you can always be sure that not only are you getting quality product, but also you're getting safe product.
Well, that's super, Roger. And how can people find Green Flower Botanicals?
Go to greenflowerbotanicals.com on the internet, and you'll see all of our products there, as well as the testing we talked about. Every product has a test online. And most importantly, for our HRN listeners, you can use coupon code HRN and save 20% off on your first order with Green Flower Botanicals.
If you show your horses, please check with your federation on the legal use of CBD oil.
All right. So yesterday, one of the auditors posted on, and I thought this was funny, posted a meme of the Family Feud game board, you know, the game board that they have in Family Feud. And at the top, it said, name something you would find in an equestrian's vehicle.
No, it would be like this. Ready? Name something you'd find in an equestrian's vehicle. Bang! And then somebody hit the button and it would go, okay, Jamie, what would you say?
Yes.
And I would say, a lead rope.
And you would be correct. Ding, 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 ding. That was one
the
of the
number one answer on the board.
Was lead ropes. Woo-hoo! That is correct.
Got the number one answer. One.
Now, Jemmy, you have to play along too, because I've been in Jemmy's car, and I think that there's a lot in there. It's just... put it that way.
I'm not even going to argue with you.
There's a lot of stuff in that car. All right. So why don't we go over some of the other things? Jamie, what else would you guess would be in an equestrian's car?
If I'm wearing my boots, then the giant mud chunks that are exactly the bottom of my boot that have fallen off. You know what I mean?
Yes. And that was a popular answer. Sand, dried mud, fresh mud, and every other kind of dirt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much dirt and mud. Yep. That was a very popular answer.
When I boarded, I would have, I would always have to stop on the way there and go to Burger King and get their veggie burger. And so probably the crumpled up piece wrapper.
Okay, see, that was not on the list because I don't think people were being honest. But we will get to my list of what I've seen in horse women's cars over the years that they did not admit to. So we'll get to that in just a minute. Somebody did admit to a mummified carrot under the seat.
yeah, they turned black.
Yeah. Now, by the way, that's down there with the French fries. Also been mummified under the seat. I thought some interesting things were, and this was a funny answer, a pesky fly. There's always a pesky fly, and he never seems to leave. And how many times have you guys been driving when it's just a fly, yet you're trying to get it out the window, and you're not even thinking about driving anymore? Because
you open the window and it doesn't go out, and then you're like, it's freezing outside. You roll up the window and then it comes back in your face, and you like roll down the window,
and then you're trying to shoo it out with your hand that you should be driving with, and you're really not paying attention to driving at all at this point.
And then you realize
a hornet that was on the steering wheel one day.
Oh, that'd be bad.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that just takes it to a whole new level.
That's when if it's a bee or a spider, we gonna wreck. Something's gonna get crazy.
Now, Jemmy, Claire said, and I'm gonna throw Claire under the bus. I don't have names for anybody else on this list, but I'm gonna throw Claire under the bus because she said wine opener. Do either of you have a wine opener in the car?
Why would you not have one? I mean, like, people carry beer openers on their keychains. How illogical is that?
I don't have a wine opener, but I do have a beer opener. It is a keychain, and it's from my law school.
I don't know what that means. That's appropriate.
Don't drink and drive, kids. Here, put a beer opener on your keychain. It makes no sense.
Well, it was to encourage them because
UVA law on it.
Yeah, they're going to be defending a lot of the people who are using it while driving. So,
oh my God, that is a great way to get new clients as a lawyer.
Yeah,
hand those out.
Create the vibe.
Now, this is something that we might have in our car, and that's Coggins tests from about the year 1990.
Oh my God, my truck glove compartment is full of all like years of Coggins and health certs to where I go through the thing and I have to like flip through like, no, not this one. Oh, here's one. Okay, not this one. That is so true, Glenn. Oh my God.
And how many of you, Jemmy, what in your glove compartment where you have your registration and your insurance card, is there just the current one or are there 55 of them that you just keep putting into the front?
Oh, it's definitely a collection. Definitely, I'm going to create a card game out of it one day. It's definitely a collection.
I'm always afraid to throw the wrong one away. It's like, yeah, and I double and triple check.
You know, like I'll have a Coggins test of a horse that I had, you know, 10 years ago. And I'm like, oh my God, I have to save it because I don't know worth anymore. Like a piece of the horse is still with me when I have his Coggins test, his drawing on this piece of paper. It's like, I can't get rid of it.
There were a lot of people that said one glove, like a left glove and no right glove. There was a couple people that said a lone horseshoe, just ended up in there. There were a lot of boots. People carry their boots and leave them in the car. Yes, we do see that with horsewomen, especially. There are multitude of boots because you never know what you're going to need.
I love this answer. Long expired tube of sunscreen from abandoned resolution to fight the farmer tan.
Is anybody in the audience? We live in Florida where we should be putting on sunscreen every time we walk out the door. You lived in Phoenix. Anybody that's a horse person good at doing it every time you walk out the door?
Oh, God, me. If you live in Phoenix and you don't. See, when I first moved to Phoenix, I'm from Georgia. I never wore sunscreen. When I first moved to Phoenix and I started getting to see a lot of the older horsewomen, I was like, I need sunscreen. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. And here's a tip. Put sunscreen on your hands too, like you're putting on lotion. Just do it, please. You will thank me later.
So Jemmy and I do these adventures where we're outside all the time. And I made the mistake that one of the first ones we were on, I was putting on sunscreen. I said, Jemmy, do you need sunscreen?
I said, no.
No.
Well, I don't want to be the harbinger of a bad message. Yes, everybody should use sunscreen. Blacks included.
But except for you.
I never use sunscreen.
She did. I did see her burn her nose one time.
I burnt my nose exactly once in my entire life. You didn't see it. I told you about it, but it was at a festival. I was at a jazz fest. So I was outside for like 3-4 days straight in New Orleans. After it was all said and done, I asked my roommates, who were all white, I said, hey, what does sunburn feel like? They told me because they were looking at me that with their arms up like lobsters. And I said, because I think I have a little bit on the bridge of my nose. And the faces I got back were like, shut up, Jemmy. We don't want to talk to you. They were in so much pain. I'm like, sorry.
Probably the one that's going to get you in trouble if you get pulled over that was on the list by a couple of people, horse people leaving stuff in their car, is used needle and syringe. Yeah, that's probably one you want to take out before the dogs come.
But see, I save all of them until the vet comes and I can put them in the little containers that they have. So I have to have a collection of needles and syringes.
Maybe
you never know where you're going to
out of the car. Good idea. I love this one. Dog hair, horse hair, and cat hair. People with allergies can't ride in my car. No, I bet you can't. And then these are the ones that, and I'm not saying Jemmy is... This is your car. I'm just saying that I've been in horse people's cars. I've been in horse people's cars for many years now, and especially women. And these are the things they don't admit to, and we're not on the list. Fast food bags, multiple fast food bags. Empty soda cans, lots of empty soda cans. 25 Starbucks cups. And usually they're all stacked up, like 10 stacked up, because instead of throwing them out, they just keep stacking them up. 2 weeks worth of unopened mail.
Guilty.
I knew you were good.
2 years worth.
It's like
Chad. I remember we were first dating. He's like, you know that if it comes in the mail and you don't open it, it still counts, right?
It still has to be paid.
Like it doesn't count.
They don't care if you open it or not. They still want the bill paid. The electric bill still needs to be paid. Candy wrappers. Lots of candy wrappers. Water bottles, all half empty. For some reason, you all can't drink the other half. They're all half empty. And I think it's probably maybe they got warm and they didn't want to drink them. I don't know. And then empty pain reliever bottles. You see all that a lot with horsewomen in the car. Ibuprofen bottles everywhere.
I will say in my defense.
Yes?
There's not eating allowed in my car, really. So as messy as it is, it's just stuff. It's like toys and random kid clothes. So I don't have the fast food bags, empty soda cans, Starbucks cups, none of that stuff. That stuff, no, not in my car. Well, in my defense.
Before I was married, if you were going to get in the passenger seat of my car, inevitably two or three things would fall out when you open the door. sorry, let me get that. You chuck everything in the back seat. And eventually that
sounds very familiar.
Exactly. In the passenger seat.
So you know what? I'm driving your ass around.
Oh, you know the other thing.
Quit complaining.
You know the other thing that's not on this list in horsewomen's cars is bras and underwear. That should be on this list, too, because you're always changing the barn and just throwing them in there and then never seem to take them out.
You can't have underwear when you're riding. Need a sports bra. Duh. So here's the deal. Once you have a kid, you have to actually have some clearance in the back for their feet. And then once you get married, then you're the passenger in my house because my husband is kind of crazy. He likes to drive, probably because I'm the most reliable driver. So he has to drive. So then he cleans out the cars. That's like his job. Clean out the car. That's fine. You go ahead. And he would, when we first got married, he would give me a hard time. Like, oh my God, seriously? Like, what is this? Now he just cleans it out and doesn't say anything anymore. He's given up.
See, that's what we do. We eventually just give up.
Good.
All right. I have time for one list. I have a study show I have to do with you and Jemmy. We're going to get Jemmy switched over right now, though. She needs to be switched over, which I should have done before and didn't get to. Do you want to do a study show? Because I have a fun one for you.
Sure.
Today. So let's get Jemmy.
I don't know if I haven't had enough coffee to do this, but we'll see.
All right. Let's get her on here. And then Sally will be joining us here in a minute from Heels Down. And then we got the book.
We'll have to do one of her the other lists with her, see if she read all the books.
Yeah, okay.
Hello.
So, all right. So you're ready for a study show. Now, this was what we do is once a month, I just search for study show in Google and I just pick the titles out. I really don't care what the article says. I think we've discovered over the years that we find contradictory studies with almost everyone we have read. So,
and they're colossal wastes of money.
Yeah, exactly. This is what your government money, most of it is being spent on. So you're going to love the first one. This one I picked out specifically for Jamie.
So Glenn gives us the lead in and Jamie and I have to guess what the rest of it is.
Correct. And of course, Jamie is our resident vegetarian and vegan on the crew here. And
with a dirty mind.
With a So here's
well, that makes two of us. That's okay. I have a dirty mind.
Not vegan.
It's been a while since I've done this. This will be fun. I haven't done this game in a while.
All right. Vegetarian diet could help you
save the world.
That wasn't
obviously.
It. That wasn't it.
Get constipated.
Yes, ding, 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 ding.
Really?
No, that wasn't it. It's a better answer than what I have, though, because my answer actually supports Jamie. A vegetarian diet could help you live longer and reduce weight gain.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here's the deal. That study has been done about a billion times.
I know.
So somebody spent money on it again.
Yes, it is still
exactly.
True.
Because I only look at the studies that come out in the last month. So.
Still good. Still true. This is something you like literally will have lower heart.
I will be
heart.
Restudying it again next month.
And I now
$10,000 grant.
Was Jemmy correct also though, Jamie?
No,
probably not. I think it's the exact opposite.
Opposite.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Opposite. Vegetarians are very regular.
I know.
If I can speak when for my people.
When I was more on the veggie side, I was a lot more regular. It's true.
This is such a great
TMI.
I don't know how we got here. All right, next. Studies show teens using e-cigarettes are more likely to. Now, this is a duh one.
Do drugs.
E-cigarettes are more likely to develop lung cancer?
Well, actually, Jamie was closer. Eventually, smoke. So, yes, if you're using e-cigarettes.
But they're already smoking.
Exactly.
Well, they have to Jimmy, they have to quit the e-cigarettes, so they have to take up smoking to quit the e-cigarettes.
E-cigarettes.
What? Duh.
Smoking.
Neither one of you are going to get the next one.
Oh, my Lord.
Baby talk is...
Oh, actually detrimental to baby's verbal development. I'm guessing.
What's up, nerd?
Darn it.
Jeez.
Sorry, it actually is true.
Baby talk is really annoying. How about that?
Oh, God, yes, I agree with that, too.
Ding, 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 but neither one are correct. So baby talk is good for dogs. I don't know if you guys saw this study that came out.
I actually think I saw this.
Yes, it was a whole study. Yeah. It made national news about how baby talk is good for dogs, and it's good for their psyche.
I would love to see how the heck they figured that. I mean, come on.
What exactly?
Come be a little bit. Come on. Did you come be a good mom?
And what was the control? Every study has a control.
Like, how does they? What they do?
Anyway, studies show frozen and this is exact opposite of a study I guarantee we had a couple years ago. Studies show frozen produce is?
I'm going to say... just as good as fresh produce. Just
ding, ding, ding. You are correct. And I swear, 5 years ago, we had a study that said it was not as good.
I don't know if I believe this study. What do you believe these days?
This whole segment just makes you doubt everything.
Everything. Right, exactly. Studies show, our new studies show, Jemmy's going to love this one. New studies show that aliens are...
Oh, more likely to exist than we ever thought.
Ding, ding, ding. Exactly right. Way more likely than scientists thought.
Listen, they've already been here. I've seen the Avengers movies. There's a hole in the sky, and they came down. They destroyed New York. There was an alien cleanup, and then Spider-Man had to go save all the people because all of the things were getting lifted, and alien technology was being lifted. There's alien technology on this planet.
So was Tom Cruise. He was there. So
well, how would else would we have built the pyramids? I mean, everybody knows aliens did it.
You know what? You know, there's this island. I can't think what it's called, but it's the one that has all those. It's Easter Island. Has all those big monuments. Have you seen those?
Yeah, from the Rainbow Bridge that Thor came in on.
So they've been like, how do these ancient peoples move these tons and tons of, you know, huge things? So they actually, I saw this video the other day where crowds of people line up on either side and there's ropes tied to it on either side and they can kind of shimmy it. And it goes like all this really long distance, and it's just people on either side.
But the alien spaceship was so much easier to move. It just drops some ropes and pick it up and move it. I mean, it's so much easier.
Thor pointed at it with his hammer, and Loki used his little thing. They were like, moved it over to the side. Hello, Stonehenge. I'm pretty sure that was the first place the Rainbow Bridge landed. It was like right in there until they like marked it off. This is where
and
we can
we're
come
back
in
to
and
Area 51 again.
And then the Hulk, he pops in because he got some sort of green thing, but he can go into the space too. And then he gets on the ship and then pilots it to some weird planet on Ragnarok. And then that happens. Oh my God. Of course.
Studies reveal that an empty stomach.
If you're thinking about horses, it's more likely to have gastric distress.
No, this is not involving horses. Studies reveal that an empty stomach
is more likely to
keep you dehydrated. I don't know.
You don't care.
Okay. It affects people's emotions. So being hangry is a thing. Studies show that being hangry is a thing.
Thank you. It's called a Snickers commercial. We learned that already. Thank you very much.
And this is one
that... If my kid doesn't have food, he's grumpy?
Exactly.
What? That is crazy.
Exactly. If your husband doesn't have food, he's grumpy too.
My son literally has a shirt that says, please forgive anything I do while I'm hungry.
There you go. See, we needed a study. You guys already knew it. She has a shirt. Studies show that constantly being on social media, if you guys don't get this one, I don't know what you guys have been living under.
Negatively affects your emotions.
Exactly. Depression and anxiety. That's correct.
I was going to say positively affects your emotion because I only post happy things and I delete anything that's a comment that is not also happy.
But doesn't it give you that moment of frustration before? As you have to, oh, God, I got to delete another one. Here it goes.
See, yeah, she's right. It's anxiety doing it. All right. So now this is going to be a good one for you, both of you. Studies show that women are more attracted to men wearing what color?
Ooh.
Skinned flesh tone.
The color of clear.
The color of clear. Is that an option? The color of
nothing. Why did I expect that coming from you? Why did I expect that?
The color of flesh.
That is incorrect. It's actually a color.
Black. I don't know. Gray, black. I don't
Well, if you're going to be that racist, I'll go white.
All right. Let's make this an issue. Which is it?
Okay, but I can solve this. You're both wrong. It's blue.
So. Okay, yeah, but which one ranked higher?
Is there a top 10 list of colors, Glenn?
No, I only have the top. It's blue. All right, now I'm going to really, while men are more...
racial on the show here. God.
Yeah, then we'll see where we're going with this. While men are more attracted to women wearing what color?
Pink.
If you say black, I'm going to freak out.
No, red, red.
You're absolutely right. It's red. You are on fire today. Okay, and I have one more study for you. Recent studies show that sex is... Careful, Jamie.
Awesome.
Oh, my God. So many things come to my mind. I have to apply so many filters to my mouth right now. Is beneficial for your health.
Recent studies show that sex is the leading cause of people. I made that one up.
You mean to tell me that
I spent $100,000 on that study?
I want those 3 seconds of my life back, Glenn. That was Come on.
Yeah, but it set you guys up for some good answers. And Jamie, you were on point there. Good job. All right, that's it for study show for this month.
Well, it's better that I say awesome instead of like boring and tedious.
No, okay. I'm happy with that answer.
That's a terrible answer.
That's